Today my guest is Bill Semph. Bill, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Fantastic. So my biggest memory of you is at CodeMatch. You know we're at CodeMatch right now. Of course you know that.
I know that, but now they do.
And we're at Open Space. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. And I happened to walk by. You were sitting in the Open Space area. You had this set of lock picks.
Absolutely.
And I said, what are you doing? You said, oh, I'm going to have an open space on picking locks.
Actually, I remember that now.
And I said, picking locks, is anybody going to show up for that? That's like that's not a software thing. This is a software conference. And you said, oh, you never know. Somebody will show up. And I'm like, who is this guy? And I happened to walk by 10 minutes later, and it was the most popular
60
open
people
space
there.
Crowded around you with your lock picks, and I felt like an idiot. So sorry about that.
No, it's perfectly fine. Actually, it was a complete guess on my part, but I've been asked back this year to do an After Dark on it, and I'm hoping I don't know. I could have zero people there. I could have half a place there. I don't know. I guess we'll find that afterwards.
So I don't know if this is a coincidence, but you know, picking locks obviously has something to do with security. Locks have something to do with security. But in your day job as a software developer, you're very concerned with security.
That's right.
And probably not a coincidence.
No, it isn't at all. In fact, there's a path that led me through here. As I was getting involved in security back in maybe 2002 in the software space, I started going to security conferences as a developer. And there aren't very many developers at the security conferences. They're kind of looked down on. The way I talk about it is the security guys sit around and complain about the developers and drink beer and say cuss words, whereas the developers sit in a circle and hold hands and sing Kumbaya. I have kind of made it my goal in the past 2 years to try to bridge that gap and bring these two things together. Mm-hmm. And honestly, lockpicking has become sort of my gateway drug. I'm a good enough picker, and I know enough about it after years of experience now that the security guys kind of let me in, even though I'm not one of them. Okay. They kind of let me in. And as it turns out, the developers love it. Mm-hmm. So that gets them willing to listen to me, and then I can say, by the way, let's talk about actual security for a while.
So I think it's you're right that although software developers know that they need to worry about security, not all of them understand what they need to worry about, the specifics, and what they should do about it.
That's exactly right. And one of the groups that I'm involved in is OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project. Mm-hmm. And it's an international group that is completely nonprofit that produces a bunch of free security tools specifically for web developers. Mm-hmm. And one of the most important things that they develop is the OWASP Top 10, which is a list of the top 10 security threats to application developers over the past 3 years.
Okay, so they publish it every 3 years?
They publish it every 3 years, though there's talk now of moving it to every 1 year because of the veracity of the threat.
Okay.
And when I say that, what I mean is most people, when they think about being hacked or having their application security compromised, they're concerned about some guy in Germany with a hoodie and cigarettes sitting behind a terminal, mercilessly hacking through their systems. Mm. But in reality, that's not true anymore. Web applications today are hacked by proxy. There is a massive botnet, actually a number of them now, that do nothing but run command and control for devices that are programmed to systematically look for flaws in web applications and then log the details that they get so that a human can go back and just walk into the machine later. Uh-huh. Take over the machine, get any useful data out of it, and then add it to the botnet. Mm. Before, your website used to have a big splash, hacked by Skulls and Bones.
Right.
Yeah, we'll never get you on all black pages and, whatever, gore or whatever dripping down the front of it. But that doesn't happen anymore. They don't want you to know. They want to use your machine.
So my websites might have been hacked and I have no idea. Or my local machine is inside my prior.
That's exactly right. Contemporary viruses don't tell you. Viruses used to do bad things to your computer. They don't. Some viruses now even help. They remove other viruses so that they work better because they want to use your machine to send a spam email or attack other machines or, do whatever. Store files, whatever. Because there's a burgeoning black market for all of this. So it's much more important now than even 5 years ago for web developers to understand that they must be responsible for the security of their applications.
Hmm. Let's get back to this list. Was it, is it ranked? Is it like 1 through 10, or are they all number 1A?
It is ranked 1 through 10, though honestly, really, the first two are kind of 1 and 2, and everything else is sort of, eh.
Well, let's cut to the chase. What,
sure.
What are 1 and 2?
So you won't be surprised at 1 or 2 if you spend any time listening about web security. Number 1 is injection. It used to be specifically SQL injection, which is a term we're all familiar with. If you read XKCD, you might have heard the Bobby Tables thing.
All right, well, quickly define what is SQL injection.
So SQL injection is sending a string through an application to a SQL Server database or a SQL database of some kind that will make it do unintended things, has unintended consequences.
Okay, so a string of T-SQL commands or ANSI SQL commands.
Exactly. Now, well, the problem is that SQL Server isn't the only thing that gets injected anymore. Now you can inject into LDAP, you can inject into Active Directory using using any number of ways. You can inject into any back-end processing system. You can even inject into Lotus Notes using the email system. So they've changed it to say just injection, because what they're basically saying is sending a string of commands that makes it through the front end of the application into the back end processor, causing unintended consequences, no matter what the back end is.
Okay.
So there's a number of things that you do to mitigate this, but the first thing you need to do to mitigate this is understand that it's there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what OWASP is all about. They give you a strict definition. They help you to understand exactly what parts of your application should be balanced for risk mitigation, and where to start and where to end, kind of as far as protecting your application against possible attacks.
Okay, so that's 1A.
That's kind of 1A. It's really number 1 on the list officially. Oh. All of the major attacks that you've heard about recently, the Sony attack and the Department of Defense attack, and this recent defense contractor that got broken into and all those accounts stolen. I can't remember who they are right now. Those were all SQL injection attacks.
And a couple of things. There's some simple things you can do to alleviate that risk, right?
There are absolutely some simple things, especially for on the .NET side of things, but really anywhere, there's some simple things that you can do. For instance, use parameterized queries, which is by far the simplest thing you can do. Even using something like an ORM, like a Hibernator MB framework, isn't enough protection, because you've always got that execute command somewhere in there that's taking some string of SQL or whatever the and Hibernate version of it is, and passing it back to the back-end system. And whenever you do that, you're in danger of having somebody inject code that you didn't expect.
Okay.
So 1B.
Yeah.
1B, which is really 2 on the list officially, is cross-site scripting, which is another thing that isn't so much of a surprise. And cross-site scripting is basically when you have a web application that accepts data from a user and then displays that data to the same user, another user, whatever, you have the possibility of the attacker putting code into your system that then displays unexpected consequences to the user. So, for instance, imagine if you... somebody could type a description of themselves or a bio into a social networking site.
Yeah.
Well, instead of typing a bio, they put an iframe in there and have it cover the entire screen and send you to some other page.
Mm.
Okay, that exact same thing happened to Hillary Clinton's site. Hillary Clinton's website during the 2008 presidential campaign was attacked via cross-site scripting, and the entire site would send you to Barack Obama's site. I've got it. My presentation on Friday, you'll see. I've got the pictorial proof. Now, cross-site scripting is a little bit more difficult to defend against.
Yeah.
But Microsoft, of all people, it comes to the surprise of a lot of people, is the absolute leader in this. They have a library called the AntiXSS Library, and it's up on CodePlex, and it is universally recognized as the way to protect against cross-site scripting.
Okay, so this is one a library you use when you render out any input that you yourself that didn't create.
It's actually the vice versa. It's to scan. It might do both.
Okay.
I know it scans the stuff coming in.
Okay.
So if you have a text box and it accepts input, the AntiXSS library will prevent damaging input.
Okay.
The stuff that's built into ASP.NET is good, but not as good as the AntiXSS library. It's grown beyond what's happening. So you have to be using the very most up-to-date ASP.NET stuff, and even then, the library is better. So you should go to CodePlex and check it out.
Yeah, and so this is the really dangerous stuff is angle brackets. Because angle brackets would encompass
you say that
HTML or iframes and scripting.
You say that, but the most common attacks actually just send the hex versions of those.
I understand.
So unless you're also checking for that,
right? Okay, so it's not
in hex and an octal.
If I wrote my own, I said, let me just replace all the angle brackets with percent GT.
Yeah, that's not going to cut it.
Not enough.
Yeah, not enough. It's a very sophisticated thing. I'll show in my demonstration on Friday some attacks that you can test using Backtrack 5, and it'll show these very sophisticated script blocks that it will send in that are all encoded in hexadecimal and octal and other encodings that the web browsers, surprisingly enough, will understand,
mm-hmm.
but that most cross-site scripting libraries will ignore.
I see. Okay. What's 3?
So 3 through 10 are kind of... And I encourage everyone to go to OWASP.org and check it out.
I don't
want
to spend the whole day on this, but let's just pick a few key ones.
That's right. The ones are especially important to .NET developers, which is kind of my focus. And number one is misconfiguration. It is very, very easy to do things in the web.config file that will...
Wait, misconfiguration is the one that in the pageant that is not necessarily the prettiest, but she's the nicest?
That's miscongeniality.
Oh, okay.
But that's very close, yes. Very close. The misconfiguration is the one who goes in and edits their web config file or their security on the files in their web folder just to make it work today and then never changes it back. That's who misconfiguration is. And she gets in a heck of a lot of trouble because it's very, very easy to do that. For instance, turning off cross-site scripting is a very easy to do. Cross-site scripting, the anti-XSS library, is very easy to do in ASP.NET because it comes with one. And it's built in. If you put in a text box and then put in a script tag, it will throw off the old screen of death. Mm-hmm. But you can turn it off. And how to do it is all, if you just type in the error message, all these things, oh, turn off the page validation, it'll get rid of that. Okay, fine, I'll turn it off. You have just opened up your entire site to cross-site scripting. As long as you turn it back on before you publish, you're fine. But how many people do that? Not nearly enough.
Right.
So that's a very common one for .NET developers. Another problem with misconfiguration is going in and saying, you know, I'm getting the security error because I'm trying to load this unusual file, like a text file of an iframe or something weird. I'm just going to go and set the permissions to everybody can do everything in this file, this directory, just to make it work for today.
Right.
And then... you forget about it and it stays there forever.
I have done that.
As have I. Session hijacking is another very, very common one. If you've heard of FireSheep, now this isn't a .NET thing, but FireSheep was a... I think that's what it was. FireSheep. Yeah, that sounds right. As it turns out, Facebook would pass an unencrypted session key that wasn't validated against the machine that it came back from. So they would pass you a session key. If somebody intercepted that, like say you were sitting at a Panera and you're on an open Wi-Fi and somebody's sniffing the traffic, which is very common, they could pick up your session key and then go in and be you in Facebook because they didn't validate the session key against the machine.
Okay.
And once again, there's a library out there that fixes that. OWASP publishes an excellent one that I strongly recommend you use, and all it does is it collects more information from the machine about than just that session key. You know, your MAC address, which is available via the server variables, for instance, and other details that might be available. And it uses all of that to make sure that not only is it the same person coming back, they're coming back from the same place.
Okay.
Otherwise,
how much overhead does something like that take?
Well, I won't lie to you. It's not free, but the well-developed ones are fine. You know, you won't notice unless you're dealing with... you've got an underpowered machine to begin with. Yeah, basically, it's a lot less than a database call. Let's put it that way.
Okay, mm-hmm. This is good stuff. Give me some more.
The cross-site request forgery is another common one, but it's kind of difficult to explain sitting without code in front of us. So I may redirect people to watch a video of the full presentation to see my code samples on cross-site request forgery.
Where is your video and presentation?
So you can find, well, a lot of people give OWASP top 10 presentations. I'm only one of them. You can find me up on Vimeo giving it to somebody that I gave it to recently. I don't remember who. But you can also find lots of other ones, and you can watch lots of good videos of the from the conference that is going to be taking place in February, which is AppSec. I think it's in February, which is OWASP AppSec. Actually, you can watch the 2011 videos, which is just as good. You can link link to them from OWASP.org and see other people talking about these as well.
Okay.
But I strongly recommend that you go and learn about that. And that's not the only thing worthwhile that you can get out of the OWASP.org's website as well. There are a bunch of free tools that you can download and use. Now, when I do my demonstrations, I use Backtrack 5 to do my security testing, but there are scores, if not hundreds, of projects in Java, PHP, .NET, C, everything, specifically relating to application security for testing, for making more secure applications, for analysis, all kinds of things. So if someone's interested in security and may want to put some time into an open source project for resume purposes or just because they feel strongly about it, OWASP is a great place to start. They're always looking for help. They need good people. And your work will get used.
Okay.
Fantastic.
That's a good start for people.
Indeed.
So, people can find out more about Bill Senf.
People can find out more about Bill Senf at www.senf.net. I'm on Twitter at @senf. You can look me up on Wiley's website. I write books for Wiley, Dummies Books and Rocks Books. So you can find me on there. And that should be more than enough of me, I think.
Are you writing a book right now?
I am. I'm actually writing two, and neither of them have anything to do with security. I have a... I put out, for Visual Studio 2010, I put out the C# 2010 All-in-One for Dummies, working with Chuck Spar. Big, Mondo, 1,000-page tome of C# goodness. Most of it I inherited from Chuck and his co-writers from the earlier C# 2008 for Dummies book and before that. I'm updating that for the V.next, whatever. I don't know if it's going to be Visual Studio 2012, or maybe we'll call it C# 4.5. I don't know what we're going to call it. But and it's got all kinds of goodness in it, and it does have some security stuff in it. But it's mostly just your basic C# Dummies book. And also, I'm putting out a Dummies book on Windows 8 Metro stuff, which is what I'm spending a lot of time with now. You can look for those coming up throughout the year. And hopefully there'll be some security stuff coming up sometime soon, too.
Bill, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thank you, David.
Great stuff. Appreciate it.
Friends, don't let friends use insecure technology.